AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
The Dow starts the week down more than 500 points. Its seventh straight day of losses. Borrowing costs are inching higher. And concern about conflicts in Ukraine and Taiwan is rising, but wheat prices are higher, weather's challenging in South America, and the farm economy's hanging tough. 2022 setting up to be another year of drama, but hey, at least the football games were good this weekend.
Live from the month with too many Mondays via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then it's on to Dr. Ernie Goss from Creighton University. Later, Rodney Wilson from the American Red Cross. Right after the news, Clark Hinz from BAM WX with a weather update. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip, the most colorful nebula in the Farm Journal galaxy of stars from Ag Day TV, Clinton Griffiths, the hot stepper in the house.
Hey, what's going on, Davis? And welcome to the folks out there that are listening to AgriTalk. It's a pleasure to be here. I know Chip taking the day off today, so I'm sitting in the hot seat, so to speak, although we call this the South Bend Meat Locker because it's typically about 45 degrees in here. Sitting in my puffy coat, going to see if I can't get through another day of news and information here on AgriTalk. Happy to do it. How are you doing?
I would think that for the most colorful nebula in the Farm Journal galaxy of stars, they could bring in some sort of heated seat or something like that. So yeah. A cup of hot tea, maybe. Anything.
A cup of hot tea. That might do it. That might help us get through there. I've probably had an entire gallon of coffee today since
was
I stayed up. Well, I stayed up late, you know, watching a little bit of football over the weekend. Oh, my gosh. Talk about some good games.
Was it good?
It was fantastic. I'm guessing you didn't watch. Come on, Davis.
I don't care.
He doesn't partake.
Oh my gosh.
I had this whole
plan to talk about, you know, the excitement and the drama and how much it was just good football.
It really was.
I love the passion. Let it out, brother. Let it out.
It was just fantastic. You know what I liked most about it? Here we go. We've got the Kansas City Chiefs playing the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen, beloved farm kid, leading the Bills. Okay. They score 13 seconds to go. Go ahead, score. Game over. But then you've got Patrick Mahomes. 13 seconds. Mm-hmm. Gets him into field goal range. Ties the game. Overtime. Chiefs win. I mean, it was drama to end drama, and it was exciting. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Sounds like a great night of hockey. I'm really happy that you got to enjoy that.
Well, other than that, I hope you had a good weekend, Davis. Do you do anything exciting?
You know what? I was traveling all last week, some big trips, and hello to the good folks out in the Eastern Indiana, Ohio area. Hello, everyone. I hope you've tuned in. A lot of traveling, so I was just sort of recouping, rehydrating, recharging.
Nice.
After all of that, it was a good weekend.
Very good. Very good. Well, I mentioned, kind of alluded to it, there's some stuff happening in the news. Let's kick that off today.
Well, Clinton, market turbulence is likely to continue in the week ahead as the Federal Reserve meets, and the biggest of tech companies, including Apple and Microsoft, will report earnings. Tesla reports on Wednesday. Now, both the S&P and Dow closed out their third straight week of losses last week, as you alluded to earlier. The NASDAQ has fallen 15.5% from its high and is off to its worst start to the year through the first 14 trading days since 2008. That, according to Factsheet, the Dow had its worst weekly performance since October 2020 last week. Clinton, what the heck happened in my absence?
Yeah, I know. It's been a tough few weeks here. And I think there's just a host of things that are kind of hitting the economy right now. Probably as big as any of that is the uncertainty overseas and what's kind of going on with Ukraine and with China and Taiwan. Those types of things tend to make people nervous. And then you throw inflation on top of it and the Fed raising interest rates and all of those things kind of make people just not feel as comfortable as they were about 2 months ago. And so, I don't know, we'll keep an eye on it and see where it goes.
Well, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget's COVID spending tracker says $5.6 trillion have been spent or distributed to deal with the coronavirus, while another $1 trillion of appropriated money has not yet been deployed. Despite this, Congress is talking about appropriating more money, this time a smaller amount, targeted to certain areas like restaurants, bars, nursing homes, and the airline industry.
We know there's continuing to be, you know, some hiccups in some of the economy over COVID. Restaurants, I believe, nursing homes, probably the airlines. I mean, given the challenges of travel and everything else that goes with it. But if you got $1 trillion sitting in the bank, maybe you work through that money first and see where it takes us.
Well, during last Thursday's hearing at the House Ag Committee, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack bristled at suggestions from the Biden administration that it has not been supportive of the biofuel industry and, by extension, farmers. Countering, they have been very supportive of the biofuel industry. He pointed out that there are, quote, 800 million reasons why we're doing that. $800 million provided to the biofuel industry in terms of support during the pandemic, as well as the $100 million to expand higher access to higher blends.
Yeah, that continues to be an issue that they're talking about and trying to. I don't know, get the industry. I think they really feel the push for electric vehicles is stealing a little bit of the biofuels thunder there. So, you know, I think there's going to be a little bit of a back and forth on this over the next probably a couple of years. And there's some big things that are happening in the biofuels industry in the next 6 months as they try to, you know, work through the renewable fuel standard and what that looks like in the future and how do we push forward on all of that. So, you know, I think it's to be expected, but, you know, that's part of it. Good stuff today, Davis. Appreciate it. Thank you for setting us off and getting us kicked off. Let's bring in Kirk Hintz, who's with BAMWX, to talk about a little bit of weather. Kirk, I know here in South Bend we had about 8 inches of snow the last 2 days, but if we look down south, it's a kind of a different story, different time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. I have my parents actually live in South Bend. It's been a winter wonderland up there for sure. And you're right. It is summertime down there in South America. I'm sure everybody's interested in the forecast as we go forward down there as well. We have come off of a week where we did have some timely rain down there in Argentina, and that was in the forecast as well, Uruguay, southern Brazil. I call that period as more of a period of rain, and I say that specifically because as we're going later into January, we're going into February, La Nina is really taking hold again, and simply put, that means some dryness, some heat returning back far southern Brazil, Uruguay, major Argentinian croplands. So I think that as we go deeper into the forecast there, some of those same conditions that we've seen the last 2 months are going to replace this week of rain that we just did have as well. And then one thing I think we need to be concerned about as well for areas, especially like Parana, Santa Catarina, southern Mato Grosso, essentially that southeastern and south central portions of into Brazil, is as we get into that second crop, Safrina corn crop area, a lot of those areas could be seeing some excessive rainfall. So alternative to areas down to the south, which could delay some of the planting season in some of those areas. So it's almost bipolar south versus to the north.
You know, that's super interesting. As we talk about those rains that fell down there, is it, you know, sometimes you can turn a drought, right, when you start getting some moisture. Right. Do we see a trend setting up, or are you saying that we're going to kind of flip back to this drier area?
Yeah, I think if for late planted crops down in those areas, they probably do get some improvement from that. There's no doubt the last 2 months from the heat and the dryness, there is some irreparable damage that has already been done. However, going deeper into the forecast, into the extended forecast, I think it is more or less the same. I don't see this kind of a pattern setting back up or seeing consistent timely rains. I think some additional struggle to get moisture is going to be on the table down there.
All right, Kirk, appreciate you jumping in, filling in and giving us a little heads up of what's happening down in South America. Davis, also appreciate you filling us in with the news and getting us kicked off here. We'll be back with Greg Machinery Pete Peterson to talk about what's hot in the tractor industry and the equipment market. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk in just a minute.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Hey.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Hey, welcome back
Justin
to AgriTalk.
Justin Timberlake collides with the hot stepper on AgriTalk.
Oh my gosh, we're having a lot of fun here on a Monday.
That always makes me sing.
Does it?
It
just kind of gets you in the mood, doesn't it?
It always makes me sing.
Machinery. Really, I want to know if that's on Machinery Pete's playlist, though. That's what I want to know. Greg, what is that top of the queue for you?
Oh,
a little Justin Timberlake.
I have to say no. I would probably say my music taste is extremely eclectic. You got to mix a little Ronnie Millsap in there, a little Vince Gill. I like some of the modern stuff too, but. I'm an old timer.
I got you. I felt like you might be a Kenny Rogers guy, but I didn't know.
See Kenny Rogers in concert in Rochester, Minnesota, and it was interesting. His opening act was Susie Boggess.
Nice.
And Susie.
Great classic country music star.
Fantastic. I tried not to be a grouchy old man, Clinton, as I get older, but country music in the early 90s was. When I listen to it now, I just about want to puke.
Listen, I'm not going to argue with you too hard on that. I feel the same about it. 90s country music, pretty dang good.
It was good. I remember typing in auction prices, listening to Boot Scootin' Saturday Night on the radio back in 1992. So that's how old I am.
Nice. Well, Greg, we've been talking for a long time about kind of the heat of this equipment market. Kind of what we've been seeing at auction. Obviously, we knew it was going to be hot ending 2021. As we've started this year, have things cooled off at all, or is this just keep rolling?
Oh, it's actually got hotter. It's unbelievable.
Really?
It's just all about availability, and there was a lot of chatter and kind of assumptions being made that when the calendar flipped, Clinton, that things would have to cool off. But I think the first big sale we saw was January 4th in Weston, Ohio, and it's just showing no signs of slowing down. And I mean, it was hard to do a pick of the week this week because, again, another week where it's just so many strong prices. What I went with, I think in a way, sort of illustrates the heat in the market. It was a sale Saturday out in Craig, Nebraska, retirement sale for Doug and Janet Johnson. Sale was by Olson. Olson Pearson Auction and Realty, Ed and the team out there do a great job. But there was a combine on the sale, Clinton. It was older. It was an 08 John Deere 9670 SDS, 3,374 engine hours. So higher hours, but very sharp. It sold for $89,000.
Wow.
Okay, now that's a data point.
Okay.
I can put that out and say, hey, 89K. Well, we need context. So 89K is the highest auction price ever on a 9670 STS combine with over 3,000 engine hours on it. And again, it almost had 3,400.
Wow.
So that's piece of the context. But then also, Ed told me the buyer was from Florida.
Oh, wow.
Now that's a long ways from Craig, Nebraska.
It sure is. That's a long drive.
It's a long drive. Yeah, hopefully they're not driving the combine home.
But
it speaks to the availability factor. When you find a nice one, and I have been seeing equipment in good condition with higher hours has been going up almost just as much as the super crazy low-hour stuff. So the market is just, again, it's still on fire.
Obviously, this was a combine, but what has that combine market been like? I mean, is this pretty standard that we're seeing these prices continue to rise for these combines?
Yeah, it's the hottest combine market I've seen in 32-plus years I've been tracking, Clinton. And again, I keep saying this all the time, but the piece that people were all underselling this fact that the tightness on the dealer lots across the country and up into Canada is I've never seen it, the used lots this tight. So it truly is the perfect time to be a seller at auction because here it is today. You know, you guys know how hard it is to find one.
Right.
And, you know, if you want a new one, well, can you even order it? Most of it's all pre-sold. And then will it even be delivered by harvest when you need it? Plus, the price of new has gone up so much. So all that pushes people back into used, but there's just not as much available, and that's why we see these prices going up.
Now, you mentioned this buyer's from Florida. What does that demand look like down south?
Well, it's very interesting, Clinton. I'm seeing, since the calendar flipped, in fact, I think I've seen now six auctions coming out of the South, the deep South, with exceedingly strong auction prices. And the 32 plus years I've been doing this, those times when I see red hot prices, I mean, out of like Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, that always has meant the used market is on fire. And just to give you a couple of examples, so last Thursday from Tennessee, Findlay, Tennessee, super nice farm retirement auction by DeWitt Auction Company for Lance Davison. They had a John Deere 8130 tractor, 2,662 hours, went for $139,500. That's the third highest price in 9 years on 8130. Had a John Deere 8320 tractor, just under 2,500 hours, go for $139,000, second highest auction price in 8 years. How about a older 93 model 4760 Deere two-wheel drive, just over 5,300 hours at $54,000, third highest ever. And get this again for context, $54,000, but the only two higher ones, Clinton, sold in July of 03 and January of 08. Wow. So you're talking, I mean, call it inflation, call it whatever you want, but and again, those were just the tractors. They had a combine. Again, we just were just talking combines. But again, this is out of Tennessee, folks. Mm-hmm. A 9770, 1950 engine hours, went for $145,000. And then on the sprayer side, they had a John Deere 4630, 1,020 hours on it, went for $134,000, second highest in 9 years. And again, grain carts are just unbelievable right now. There were a pair of 2021 Armor Light 40-foot grain trailers. They went for $37,000 each. I had a guy at the sale, and he dropped me a note on Twitter, and he goes, "Pete, I think they're 35 new."
Oh wow!
But it's just availability,
right? It's just can you get one?
Can you get one?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the supply chain. It's the availability. It's the people that are building these things, getting the labor and the workforce. It's trying to move this equipment around the country and get it back on dealer lots. I mean, all of it together. I think you even gave me a note about a cornhead that sold crazy high.
Yeah, and again, let's stay in the deep South. So just Saturday in Swan Quarter, North Carolina. Now, on the one hand, I hope sometime in my life I'm able to visit Swan Quarter, North Carolina. Yeah. It sounds like a nice place. But our friends at Rich and Rich Auctioneers had a farm sale there Saturday, and they had a Drago, a GT 12-row 36-inch that went for $103,100. Now, I've been seeing Drago cornheads, the used values go up noticeably here the last 6 months all across the country. But 103.1, that's the highest auction price ever in a Drago. And the same sale set a record on a seed tender, an Unverfer 3755 XL, one for 32.5. And how about this, Clinton, for a pickup?
Okay.
And pickups have been red hot. So they had a 2001 Chevy 3500 crew cab diesel dually. 178,000 miles, went for 26.5.
20 years old?
Yeah, 21 years old for 26.5. Now, I did, right before I hopped on the call here, I saw on LinkedIn that Ford just announced they were ceasing or suspending production of the Maverick model, the kind of on the lower end price-wise. But again, just for availability, they can't make it. Oh. So that's why you see good used pickups. But again, a 21-year-old with 178K at 26.5, just unreal.
Unreal. Do you think this changes at all if borrowing costs go up? You know, like we see these interest rates tick up and it gets more expensive to borrow the money.
That is the a huge thing, right? And if that, well, it would change things, but again, With such a tight situation on the dealer lot, that's the again the puzzle piece people are discounting, because that won't change overnight, because you can't, you know, new is sold out, so it's just going to take a while, and I don't know but interest rates going up, obviously, you know, we'll do things. You could argue that might push more people back into the used market if, you know, interest you're paying on the new equipment you want to buy. It's all connected. It always has been, but it's interesting days for sure, tracking that stuff.
Hey, Greg, real quick, a couple auctions you want to highlight. We've got about a minute left here.
Yeah, our friends at the Steffes Group, Clinton, two big auctions this week. One is on Wednesday. It's their Midwest location online sale from all their locations. Check it out, steffesgroup.com, folks. Ton of equipment, some Challenger tractors you'll want to look at. And then the same day, also on Wednesday, an online farm auction for Steinfeld Farms in Tama, Iowa. Some really nice John Deere equipment, an S690 combine. So again, check it out, steffesgroup.com.
All right. Greg Peterson, sure appreciate you as always. Thank you for being here, and we'll let you get back to some of that 90s country so you can you know, get your data inputted today and jam out a little bit to some Susie Boggess. Sure appreciate you as always,
right.
Greg.
Take care, guys.
Thanks. Hey, we're going to check on some markets, and then we'll talk with Dr. Ernie Goss of Creighton University about the rural Main Street economy. That will be next, coming up on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
All right, let's bring in Brian Grady with Pro Farmer to give us an update on what's happening in markets here on Monday.
Well, Clinton, you know, soy complex under pressure and soybeans facing double-digit losses here. It rained across most of Argentina over the weekend, aside from northern areas, and also some of those rains moved into southern Brazil. But it missed most of those areas, although there is more rain in the forecast for this week in southern Brazil, and that's putting the pressure on the soy complex so far this morning. And you know, we've been kind of back and forth with all the price action below unchanged, but it's been kind of choppy this morning. But you know, currently we're trading off the lows, but sharply lower in soybeans. Wheat market is trading to the upside pretty significantly. Concerns with the geopolitical side of things with Russia and Ukraine and what will happen there. And so that's supportive, along with the dryness and drought across the central and southern plains here in the United States. Corn is kind of caught in the middle. Pretty much, you know, just holding a little bit below unchanged at the moment on spillover from soybeans, but being helped by the strength in the wheat market.
Real quick, anything of note on the livestock side?
Well, the cattle on feed report last Friday was bearish, and we're getting a sharp negative reaction to that. So we're seeing heavy selling across the live cattle and feeder cattle markets this morning. And like I said, you know, all three categories on the cattle on feed report came in on the bearish side of expectations. The most bearish was the placements number, which exceeded the top end of expectations. So that's putting pressure on the market. Hogs opened lower this morning, now trading with a mixed tone. So they've come off their lows.
All right. Well, we'll continue to follow along. Appreciate it as always. Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. More AgriTalk when we come back.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Hey, welcome back. Sure appreciate you all tuning in with us today on AgriTalk. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory today. We've had a lot of prognostication. Yeah, that's the word. About what's going to happen in the overall economy. We've been keeping tabs on what's going on with the Dow and how, you know, where are we headed here as we start 2022? From the rural economy side of things, the picture may be a little bit different. Here to kind of help us sort through some of that, we've got Creighton University's Dr. Ernie Goss, author of the Rural Main Street Index. Dr. Goss, sure appreciate you being with us on AgriTalk today. I know your latest numbers came out last week. Walk us through how we're starting 2022 from a Rural Main Street Index perspective.
Okay, Clinton, thanks for having me on. I'll call myself the economist soothsayer. How's that?
That works for me.
Okay, good.
That works for me.
Everything You know, Clinton, of course, this is a survey of bank CEOs in rural areas in 10 states. So we're getting, and these are agriculturally dependent and energy dependent areas of the country. And the survey for the month of January, was very good. The index was down a bit, but it's still in the area indicating strong growth. But we did ask the bankers about the greatest threats to farm operations going forward.
Yeah.
And number one, the greatest threat was soaring farm input prices, by far the greatest threat to farm operations as perceived by the bank CEOs.
Yeah, put that in perspective for us. I mean, you ask different questions to producers or to bank CEOs, you know, every time that you do this. Have you seen a reaction like this before, or is this something that's new?
Not on the inflation front, never. We've been doing it since 2006, Clinton, so it's not, doesn't have that long a history. Of course, that's 15 to 16 years, so
right.
Quite got some data there. And we ask about rate hikes, and the average rate hike across the bank CEOs is about 70 basis points. That's 71 hundredths of a percent or 7/10 of 1% by the end of the year. But a high share of the bankers expect more than 1%. Going forward, so that's a real concern for the farm operations. Farmers obviously depend heavily on borrowing and borrowing cost.
Yeah, we were just talking with Machinery Pete. Obviously, I asked him about interest rates and impact to machinery markets. Don't you ask a question about from a machinery standpoint? What was the read there? Mm-hmm.
It was very strong. In other words, we're seeing the best numbers we've recorded since 2011 regarding machinery purchases, agricultural machinery purchases, but also farmland price growth. Mm-hmm. We're seeing some of the highest numbers, in fact, record numbers on farmland price growth, and that's stretching all the way from Illinois across to Wyoming and as far north as North Dakota and as far south as Kansas. So seeing some very strong numbers for those two factors as farmland in farmland prices and agricultural equipment sales.
As you try to sort through some of the data there, state by state, anything stand out significant?
Well, I think it's that some states we're seeing dependence on ethanol. Ethanol is much more important, for example, for three states we survey. That would be Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. And there's some concerns there, at least expressed by the bankers, regarding what's going to happen from the Biden administration. Of course, that sector depends heavily on what happens in Washington. And Washington has expressed some reservation. Maybe that's too kind of a word for ethanol. But ethanol right now is doing pretty well, though.
You've been doing this, obviously, you said since 2006. We had the downturn in 08. You know, we went through the drought and the commodity rally in 11 and 12. How does this year stack up as you start to look at the big picture and try to put 2022 on some sort of scale?
Well, it's much better now, Clinton. And why is that? Well, the Federal Reserve has increased the money supply by 35 to 40%. We've had Trump administration program, stimulus program. We had the Biden stimulus program. Now we've had the infrastructure bill. All three of those have pushed down the price of the value of the dollar. And that's been very supportive of the farm sector, agriculture, and including exports, of course. And that's been much different than what we saw in 2008. So this is right now, the farm economy is stacking up pretty darn good.
Are bank CEOs, do they talk much about availability of funds and being willing to lend at this time and what those loans look like?
They do. And then and the loan index for the month was down significantly, but we did expect a downturn in January. So even with the seasonal adjustment, it's still weaker than what we've seen in the past. And a lot of it has to do with the cash positions of farmers out there. They stand in pretty good cash position, so the borrowing is less than what we've seen in previous years in January.
As you start to look out into the rest of this year, give me a few things that you've got hot on your radar, things that you'll be taking notes about.
Boy, I'll be watching the Federal Reserve and what they're doing, and they meet They'll come out with their decision. There'll be no decision on the 26th of this month, but they're going to warn us about rising interest rates, and that'll be very important factor for the agricultural sector going forward. Also, any tariffs and trade restrictions, that's going to be a very big issue. What happens to China after the Winter Olympics? In other words, are we going to have flyovers of Taiwan and some real black swan, potential black swans there? That would be high risk and high cost if something like that happens. Be watching that as well.
How do these big kind of geopolitical events traditionally, how have they impacted the index?
They are big, 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 and very important, because most Americans, I'm sorry to say, don't really understand how important the trade is to the agricultural sector. And you got for example, here in the midsection of the country, Iowa and Nebraska right here, that depend heavily on what happens in going to China, what's happening in South America, and even what's going on in Ukraine. The international events have a big, big impact on agriculture and manufacturing, for that matter. Also, the value of the dollar. Keep an eye on the value of the dollar. But I'd say the number one thing to watch would be the yield on the 10-year Treasury. It's now about 1.75. What's that reading if it goes above 2%? That'll be a big warning signal.
Okay. Obviously, the last couple of years, we've talked a lot about COVID. And I know you've asked some questions in the past, and there's been some comments from some of our bankers about that. What does that conversation look like as far as what you're getting back on your index?
That's been a big issue. And Clinton, where it's affecting agriculture a lot is delays in getting the inputs in and the outputs out, but more of the inputs, fertilizer deliveries, for example. That's been a big, big issue. And also in terms of bankruptcies on what we call rural Main Street, that would be small businesses like particularly restaurants and bars and accommodations. There we're probably going to see those turn upward because the administration, the past two administrations, have suppressed those by record stimulus programs. We've had a lot of money pouring in from the federal government, and that will continue. We'll continue to see the positives from that, at least in the first half of 2022.
We've talked quite a bit about the supply chain and workforce and labor. Any conversation around labor and getting help?
Absolutely. Of course, we're in a part of the country that depends more on capital usage, but not as much labor as you'll see on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it's still a big, big issue. And the bankers report difficulties in finding and hiring qualified workers, and that's probably number three on the ranking of individual threats going forward.
All right. Well, as you kick off this year, what's your hope? What do you think producers need to take away from this information and these index numbers as far as like planning ahead and trying to work forward?
Well, Clinton, what we need to see is inflation up, but not like what we're seeing right now. We'd like to see inflation for the agricultural sector move down below or around 3%. Anything above 3%, we're going to see higher interest rates, and that's going to mean typically we'll see a value of the dollar that increases, making it more difficult to sell abroad, and that's what we're going to be watching for in the weeks and months ahead.
All right, Dr. Ernie Goss, he's the author of the Rural Main Street Index from Creighton University. Dr. Goss, thank you so much for being here and joining us on AgriTalk today. Sure appreciate it. And we'll continue to report on that index as it comes out each month. Thanks again.
Thank you, Clinton. Good to be with you.
All right. Well, we're going to continue the conversation here on AgriTalk as we get ready to have Rodney Wilson. He's a senior biomedical comms specialist for the American Red Cross. And, you know, as I was talking with Dr. Goss there, I mentioned about the coronavirus. One of the things that we've seen quite a bit of conversation about is getting enough blood supply out into different parts of the country. And in fact, the Red Cross is raising some red flags at this time about availability. So we'll talk with them next about what that situation looks like and what it can mean for some of our rural areas. Last week, I did a pretty interesting interview with kind of the Rural Health Association, Alan Morgan. I know he's been on AgriTalk with Chip several times in the past, but kind of asking him how our hospitals are doing right now. That story's up on AgWeb if folks want to go and take a look. But, you know, for him, one of the main things that he's seeing out there is just, you know, getting help, getting workers. And I think that's going to continue to be part of the storyline. You know, I did ask him about mandates. He says at this time that's not really a driver in getting workforce. It's just a lack of people that that are available. So a great story. It's up on agweb.com if you take a look. We'll be right back with the Red Cross coming up in just a minute.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Hey, welcome back as we wrap up a Monday here on AgriTalk AM. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory today. Happy to welcome Rodney Wilson. He's with the American Red Cross. And Rodney, thank you for being here. One of the things we've been talking about is kind of some of the dire needs for blood supply out there. And in our audience, obviously a rural audience, but just as important there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. So the Red Cross is facing really a national blood crisis, and you've heard of blood shortages before, mm-hmm. but it's different this time. You know, because of ongoing challenges that we're facing due to the pandemic, the blood supply has continued to get lower and lower over months' time, and now we're at the lowest blood inventories that we've seen in more than a decade.
So put that in perspective for us. Tell our viewer, because we know people will respond and they'll jump in and help out. Is this, you said crisis, is that the level we're at?
Yeah, so in general, the Red Cross tries to keep more than a 5 days supply of blood on hand so that hospitals can be ready to respond to any type of medical situation. In recent weeks, we've had less than half of a day's supply of certain blood types, which has really compromised our ability to meet patient needs. You know, one thing that's happening right now that you know, we've not seen before is that doctors and hospitals are having to look at this very limited supply of blood and make difficult decisions about who can receive blood now and who can wait. And prioritizing patient care so that if somebody is in a traumatic injury in a car accident, we know that that patient will need blood immediately. Whereas maybe a child with cancer is coming into the hospital for a routine transfusion that they have to receive as part of their chemotherapy process, that child may have to wait because of a car accident victim. And maybe wait a day, maybe wait up to 3 days. We've heard some patients having to wait multiple days for these types of treatments, and their health declines during that time. It's really quite a situation that we're not used to seeing, and we need more donors to help us change that situation.
Yeah, and I'm sure it always feels, you know, a lot of us probably have that. Well, it's someone else. It's not at my family, but at some point it could be at your doorstep. You may be the family that needs that help or have already been in that situation. How many people do we need to get kind of fired up and rolling here to try to change this situation we're in and move the needle?
Well, the Red Cross needs to collect on average about 12,500 blood donations every day. And I know that that sounds like a lot. Would you look across the whole country, if we could have that many donations each day, that helps meet the ongoing need. So one of our biggest challenges right now is that we don't have as many blood drives as we do in normal times. Because of COVID challenges, many of our blood drives have canceled, or blood drive sponsors have said they can no longer host drives, such as high schools or businesses where now everybody's working from home remotely. So they don't have anybody in their office to even host a blood drive for. So those issues of fewer blood drives make it a harder challenge for us to collect enough blood. So, you know, one thing that we've heard from people is that, you know, they've made an appointment to donate blood, and then it got canceled because the blood drive canceled at the last minute. And And we certainly hate to see it when that happens, when a blood drive cancels. But you know, that's part of the reality of dealing with COVID right now. And so if that happens for you, we ask you to schedule as soon as you can again. Find another appointment available so that we can continue to rebuild the supply.
Are there certain blood types that we need more of or that you're seeing a bigger critical need for?
Well, really, all types are needed right now. In a typical shortage, it's type O or type B that we see at the lowest levels. But what's unique right now is that all types are really at the lowest levels we've seen in many, many years, which is another reason why we're struggling to meet patient needs. In normal times, if type O is low, it's the universal type. So doctors reach for it in an emergency situation. But if type O is low, we still have other blood types that if a trauma patient comes in and there's not enough O to transfuse them immediately, they'll type that patient and discover, okay, this patient is, you know, A positive. So The A positive supply is strong. We'll start to give them A positive. Well, at this point, with all types very low, patient care is being impacted. And that's not the situation that anybody wants to be in.
No, absolutely not. How has this impacted like platelets and plasmas and all of that as well?
Yes, absolutely. And platelets have a shelf life of just 5 days. So that's been an even bigger challenge for us, is to collect enough platelets for all kinds of medical care, but particularly cancer patients. I've personally interacted with a number of individuals who are being treated for cancer right now, who have had their transfusions of platelets delayed because of this shortage. And especially when it's a child and the parents are telling us, you know, we're afraid to go to the hospital again because the last time they didn't have the platelets available. We're afraid that that's going to happen again for our child. This is a situation that has real life consequences for people that need medical care that can't wait.
If you know, you talked about blood drives and things being fewer of them and some of them getting canceled, where else can folks go?
Yeah. And so the easiest way to find a blood donation opportunity near you is on our website, redcrossblood.org, or 1-800-RED-CROSS. Put in your zip code and you can search a mile radius and a date range. Right now, because we have fewer drives than we normally would, you can search for further out. We may not have a blood drive near you in the next week even. Search maybe through the next several weeks.
Okay.
And as soon as you're able to find an appointment available, please schedule it. And we do ask you to schedule rather than just walking into a blood drive because of the pandemic, especially, we want to control the number of people that are at a blood drive at any given time. And the appointments will allow us to do that.
All right. Hey, Rodney, sure appreciate it. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. I know folks out there are ready to step up and fill in. I want to thank everybody else for listening to AgriTalk today. It's been a pleasure. Stay safe. We'll see you again tomorrow.